Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest, of course, is Megan Buchanan. And we're going to talk about, she got the green light to do Everest, and we're also going to talk about resilience. So when you got the green light, Megan, for Everest, how'd you feel?
So excited. This is, again, if you've been listening to this, I was supposed to go last year, and the trip was canceled, and the police shut the mountain down 2 weeks before we were supposed to fly out. So you have to wait an entire year to go again. And we just got word from my mountaineering company. They've been in close contact with the Nepalese government and talking through how they're going to navigate around COVID for the season to happen. And I literally have just been like looking with one eye, tying out the corner of my eye, like, please tell me we're going to go. And I got the word from the mountaineering company, Climbing the Seven Summits, that we can book airfare. They've got it figured out how we can quarantine and how we're going to keep everybody safe. So I'm so excited. I leave like in 5-6 weeks. I think 6 weeks.
So you said that there's a 2 week window every year where people get to go ahead. It's that narrow.
It's called a 2 week summit window. So the fact is, we actually fly into this little village called Blukla, and you start hiking there. It takes you about 7 to 10 days to even get to base camp. And then you spend a good month and a half doing rotations to all the different camps. You go higher in elevation, you come back down, recover. Then you'll do another loop up further, come back all the way down to base camp. So you spend a month and a half preparing your body for the altitude and for summit day. And then all the teams that are there, they kind of coordinate together. And there's a 2 week summit window that is the best chance of, and that's at the end of May, for you to summit Everest. So you're spending, I'll be on the mountain about 2 months total. And you're just preparing and waiting for that window to open and go for summit. It's a lot of waiting, a lot of patience.
So from the time you get to base camp until the time you summit, what's the time frame?
It could be 4 or 5 weeks, anywhere in there, because it takes you about a week to get to base camp. So then we're talking about 4, 5, 6 weeks, doing rotations, hiking. One of the biggest things between base camp and camp one is the Khumbu Icefall. And that's the crazy pictures you always see of people walking over the crevasses, over the ladders. And that is a very dangerous spot. So we do that. We also will go up and over actually the Lhotse face, which is practice acclimatization, also a very dangerous slope. And so you are working your skills, working as a team, acclimatizing your body for a good, 4 to 6 weeks before that summit window.
So, your goal is to do the 7 summits, and you've done a few already. From what you've already done and what you anticipate doing at Everest, is any of the other summits as challenging, or I might say, scary as Mount Everest?
That's a good question and a couple different reasons. I think a lot of the other summits you do, I always recommend to people that, start with Kilimanjaro. It is beautiful. It is challenging, but it is something that is definitely more attainable without technical skills. Move to Elbrus in Russia, which again is really amazing, but then you get some experience with rope teams. Then you move to Aconcagua, which is really high altitude. Test your body there. How does your body do in altitude? And you are using crampons. You are on, hard ice. So all of these other mountains add up to prepare you and give you the experience to go ahead and do some of the harder mountains. Denali was very difficult physically. And I'll let you know after I do Everest, because there is a lot of controversy of which one is harder. They're harder for Denali or Everest for different reasons. I think Everest is harder because it is such a long duration, and it's hard for your body to be at altitude that long, or mentally to be on a mountain for 2 months in the cold. But you do have a support crew. You have Sherpas helping to carry your stuff. On Denali, you have no support crew. I think we've talked about this. You and your team are carrying everything you need, all the tents, all the food, human waste, fuel, everything. And so you've got a really heavy pack on, and you're pulling a heavy sled. It is physically demanding, but I think, and this is going to tie, oh, I love how this works, it's going to tie right in, so naturally this is going to roll off my tongue. Denali really helps you build that resilience to keep moving forward, to prepare yourself, I think, for something like Everest. So the definition of resilience, which I just have ingrained in my mind, is the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties, you know, toughness, the process of adapting well in the face of adversity and trauma and tragedy and significant sources of stress. And I think, like, Denali for me was such a, head down, just 1 foot in front of the other, chugging through it until we got to the top. And it was that moment that I was like, man, I'm mentally ready for Everest. Like, I can do this. And so now I'm training all the physical skills, every day training to get there.
You know, we live in an age where we were hit by a pandemic. I mean, from one day to the next, our whole society changed. And, you know, there's frontline workers that are placing their life on the line every day, going into hospitals, helping people who are sick. There's people who are sick who, you know, it's taken a long time for them to recover. So what you're doing on Everest, do you think that could be a good example of resilience for COVID patients and caretakers?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this year has been an opportunity for every single person to, you know, expand their resilience, to really work on their resilience. I can't imagine there is a person that has not been affected by COVID this past year. And again, we talk about this so many times, Cynthia, about how really it's about choosing. Everything's a choice. And through the hardest of times, you have the choice to make something out of it. Choose to build your resilience. Choose to adapt to survive. And, you know, and reinvent yourself or whatever it is. Keep moving forward in the toughest of times. And you have that choice. It may not be like, let's talk about like Summit Day. We're moving at a snail's pace. You are moving so slowly. And so for some people this year through this pandemic, you might feel like you are moving the tiniest step at a time, but you're still moving forward. You are still developing that resilience. And then, you know, then we're stronger the next time we have to deal with some sort of tragedy. I think it absolutely applies to every single person. In the world.
Because when you do a mountain such as Everest, facing the possibility, as many people who have COVID, of maybe not making it, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the death rate of COVID is worse than the death rate of Everest. But yeah, you do take, you know, more than Everest. Like, there's actually a lot of climbers who lost their lives. Amazing skilled climbers lost their lives this year on K2. There absolutely is a risk. You also run the risk of you spend all this time, all this money, all this energy, and at the end, you also run the risk of having the choice: do I push it and risk it, or do I turn around, which is a safe thing to do? And so, you know, Everest is full of danger and choices as well. But I mean, absolutely, with what you're saying with COVID, I think the big difference is people with COVID, they didn't have the choice of getting COVID. I have the choice of taking the risk to climb Everest. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've done a few mountains before. Would you say this is the most challenging preparation that you've done so far?
By far, yes. And, you know, and this again, this might be a little, now that I've done Denali, I do realize, I definitely could have trained a little, some different things. If anyone is ever interested in doing, really getting into things, go take the prep. I did a prep course on Mount Baker for Denali, 6 days. Really helped me understand what I needed to know before I went. And we were just talking about this earlier. I just spent the week in Ouray, Colorado, with my Everest guide, meeting him for the first time. And he was running us through his expectations. We were out there on the ice. He was running us through scenarios that we need to be prepared for. And honestly, the strength, the mental drive, I am down with that. But there are things in the next, you know, 6 weeks I need to work on. And, he took me to town. I felt like I was a new kid at school. And you're like, this isn't roped up right, and this isn't right, and you got to do this. And I'm like, yes, sir, I will do it. And but, you know, and that's kind of part of the resilience as well. Like, man, it's so easy for you to feel like me thinking like, man, I've got all this dialed in. I meet my Everest guide and he's like, no, you don't. You need to work on X, Y, and Z. And it'd be very easy for me to think like, oh man, I don't want to do this anymore, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I just take it in stride at this point of like this. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to learn this from him now instead of learning it at base camp. And so I've got the 6 weeks to train. And so that resilience is put your head down, work it through one step at a time, and keep moving forward towards your goal.
Now, does your instructor, does he do it every year?
He has done it, I think this will be his sixth year consecutively for Everest. I'm not sure if he had done it before, but he is a guide for a couple different mountains. Normally he'll guide with RMI, which I did Denali with, but Denali or RMI does not go to Everest. And so they switch over to climbing the Seven Summits owned by Mike Hamill. And so he's a guide for him for Everest. And yeah, he is a beast. That guy is awesome at what he does. And part of it is, he told me, he's like, I do not handhold you. If you need handholding on this mountain, you shouldn't be on this mountain. And I agree with him 100%. You need to be prepared to do something like that. But it takes so much. It takes a lot of work and focus and dedication. It's, you know, not staying up late on Friday and Saturday night so I can train. It's, you know, doing the homework, practicing my knots every day, you know, practicing transitions with my carabiners, you know, for a year to get prepared. I want to be as prepared as I can.
So after Everest, you're going to do a couple of other summits this year, right? Hopefully.
Yes. I love saying it's all downhill from there. Yes. So I will finish up with Karzant's Pyramid in Indonesia in the fall. And then I will go to Antarctica in December. I'm going to spend the whole month there. I will climb Mount Vinson, which is their highest peak. I think it's like 16,200 feet. Piece of cake after Everest, right? But it's going to be very, very cold. But then I will go and do the South Pole because I'm going to do the North and South Pole as well.
Now, the different poles, are they hot or cold? I mean, when you get there, what's the temperature like?
Even in summer, they're both going to be cold because, the sun just doesn't reach it the same way. Except, you know, and I haven't started doing research on that. I know in Denali, you know, which is very northern latitude, the reflection off the glacier during the day with sun, it is hot. So yeah, so it I think it will be the, you know, hot on the glacier during the day and freezing cold at night. But
so tell us a little bit about once you reach the summit and then you've got to go down again. By the time you reach the summit, you're pretty tired.
That's one thing that people don't really take into consideration unless you've been doing it a while is you don't just need the energy within yourself to get to the summit. You need the energy to get back down. Most accidents happen on the descent, on the way down. And I have been on climbs before where a person had only enough energy to get to the summit, and then he started falling apart on the way down. It puts his life in danger. If you're on a rope crew, it puts everyone else's life at danger. I've also been, I remember I was climbing Aconcagua. That was a brutal day with weather and high, like hurricane force winds were coming in. And we were all, I think I told the story, there were 30 or 40 people total who started for summit like at 2 a.m. that day. And once we got across this one extremely windy ridge, I looked back and there were only 10 of us left because everyone else had turned back. And then when we got higher, there were really only, you know, like probably 6 clients and 2 different guides of all the companies that started out. And my guide, he actually made one gentleman stay. We were so close to the summit, but it was going to be another like 45 minutes or hour to the summit. And he made that guy sit there because he's like, you don't have enough energy to get down. And they almost got into a fight. The client was very upset, like, I can make it there. And my guide's like, I know you can make it there, but you won't be able to make it down. Because it was going to be a 6-hour hike to get back down. And crampons, and you've got to be, you know, like, again, you've got to have the energy to get up and get back down. So you got to know your body and take care of yourself.
Which is more dangerous, doing it, reaching the summit or going back down?
It just all depends on the weather, the conditions, the people, the other people on your own crew, people on other crews. But again, generally, most accidents happen on the way back down. So I think statistically the descent's more dangerous.
Because of fatigue?
All of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think fatigue. I think also your mind probably tends to relax a little bit because I made summit. All right, I hit my goal. And your brain, maybe you aren't paying as close and detailed attention. You know, going uphill slowly, I think you have more control. Going downhill, sometimes you move a little bit faster. Your feet can come out from under you. So there's just a lot of things that go into that. You have to keep that mental fortitude when you're going down too.
You know, a lot of people in this country over the years, they've watched the Rocky movies. And Sylvester Stallone, you know, highlights the training and everything that goes into being prepared for a 15-round boxing match. But
yeah.
would you say that preparing for one of the 7 summits or all of them is just as difficult or more difficult than what people see on boxers train for a match?
I think that's a great question. I think that it's probably just a lot more boring than people think. Like it's so time intensive. And again, there's 2 kinds of people that become mountaineers. Usually someone from the climbing world, that was ice climbing, rock climbing, becoming mountaineers. And then people who were hikers and trekkers like myself, to become mountaineers. And one of the things you have to do to prepare for mountaineering is you need to learn the skills that you don't have. You know, you haven't been doing for years. So last couple of years, I've been trying to learn more of the ice climbing, rock climbing, but it's a lot of time of trying something new and not being great at it and working until you get good at it. It's just a lot of time and experience over the years that go into it. Unfortunately, like Everest is not a montage of training. And if you are that person, you should not be on the mountain. It is not safe because it is years of working it, figuring out your gear, you know, the skills that are needed. And then like for me, the skills, and I'm like, oh man, I'm not quite there yet. The next 6 weeks, I'm going to be hammering those as hard as I can. And so, you know, it's a lifetime of practice and skill training to build up to something like this. And, you know, the other thing with them, you know, like ski racers and boxers, it's like minutes of a match or a race or whatever it is. And I will say though, Everest is 2 months on the mountain. So at least we get to marinate in it for quite some time. So it's not over quickly either. So yeah, I'd say definitely mountaineering and this kind of thing is not a montage. It's a life of practice.
So what's it like emotionally and mentally, never mind the physical aspect, but emotionally and mentally for something like this as you're traveling to do this? You have to have a certain mindset, right?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. You know, and it's probably different for everybody. I am like even this weekend meeting some of my teammates, it starts with the littlest thing. Like they'll say something like, well, if we summit, and every time I'm like, nope. When we summit, like I am such a like manifesting my own destiny with positivity kind of person. And of course, at the end of the day, look, I want to come back with fingers, nose, and toes. I tell my mom I'm coming back with fingers, nose, and toes. I do understand at some point if we have to turn back, we do. But I like to talk about it as when we summit. I start my intention way before I even start traveling to Nepal. And then when I do start traveling, I have this burn in my belly, this fire. That, and like even talking about it right now, I start to get so pumped up because I also want to enjoy every bit of the experience. And I think to make it through 2 months on the mountain, you've got to love it. And I choose to love it and love every part of it and be excited about it and keep that positivity, having that resilience to keep moving forward with intent and positivity. And that's, I have found over the years too, with the people I climb with, everyone has different personalities, but luckily I think mine does tend to rub off on some people. If they're feeling a little bit down, I may annoy them at first when I start singing to them, but then they end up loving it and just like, all right, thanks for picking up my spirit. So I think, I just really start getting mentally psyched up and just ready for every moment, every challenge, and meet it with positivity and with intent.
You belong to an exclusive club, don't you?
I don't know. It's a club of a lot of energy, I think.
So
it's a really, actually, the whole mountaineering community. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sure you keep in touch with the people that you climb with, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is the other thing, is it is such a bonding experience to go and climb and spend that much time together. But when you are thrown into, you know, situations where your survival is dependent on each other, you help each other get through, you know, not feeling well, or, you know, not feeling so great a certain day, but it really bonds you close with other human beings to go through something so extreme together. So yeah, I have remained friends with so many people that I have climbed with, amazing guides. And then this community of mountaineers, everyone knows each other. It is really amazing. So then you start talking about the guides who know guides and this other person, and it really is a small world of some of the most amazing, humbled, talented people I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. It is a very special group of human beings that do this mountaineering.
So you are a rocket scientist, and I'm sure that your fellow mountain climbers come from all walks of life, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, actually. There are quite a few. Well, actually, on this trip, I've got two chemical engineers that are coming. A lot of times there's a lot of doctors who usually end up coming, and there's from all walks of life. And honestly, when you get to this point of Denali, Everest, you know, I think that we're a little bit older. I'm in my 40s, and there's a lot of people through their 60s who will be doing Everest. And I think there's a couple of different reasons why. One, it's expensive. Two, you really have the mental strength from life lessons to really take it on. You know how to struggle and push through it. And then to be able to take the time off. We do, every once in a while, you will get someone in their 20s who is just so passionate about it from the beginning, and they'll scrape everything they've got to be able to come. And so it is a huge mix of people.
You know, Meg, we only have a little over a minute left, so promote your group and yourself.
Well, oh my gosh, you're awesome. Well, I have started a thing called GRIT, which is GGRIT. And of course, the R is for resilience, which we talked about today. And I just truly believe that, with these tools, you can overcome any challenge and find the positivity and really reach your goals and your full potential through these. So me climbing the seven summits and the poles is just one way to kind of prove that out. And I love talking to groups and companies about especially navigating through long duration challenge. So definitely revamping my website right now, but look me up, contact me if you'd like me to talk to, any kind of group. And also then follow me on Instagram and Facebook and wherever else through my adventures, because I will hopefully be posting quite a bit up Everest and really trying to just share the experience with people who just haven't done this kind of thing before.
Great, Megan. We will be talking again. I'm Cynthia Poore. Megan Buchanan, and this is Women Who Inspire. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook. Thanks, Megan. Thank you, everybody, for
Thanks,
listening.
Cynthia.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. See you later. Bye.